Let's move into the book of Matthew. If you'd like a Bible in your hand, a Bible on the racks, the Bible verses will be on the screen. But do borrow a Bible if you wish. Jesus has been out preaching, and now he's out teaching. Now, when he saw the crowds, Jesus went up on a mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him, and he began to teach them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything, except to be thrown out and trampled by men. You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven." Yes, the poet Keats described this world as a veil of soul making. A veil of soul making. Although the idea first crops up early in the 2nd century AD, in the writings of the Bishop Irenaeus, who was based in Lyon, modern France. In those days it would have been Gaul, Gallia, or something. Yes, something like that. Asterix country. Anyway. and there was Bishop Irenaeus describing this world as a veil of soul making. It's a controversial phrase, not everybody agrees with it. It's not necessarily true. Your soul can be lost in this world as well as found, or it can be made and renewed by God. Jesus calls us in previous chapter to repent, and that means turning from what we know is wrong and turning towards God. Jesus has called us to follow him in a spiritually hostile place. This is not a neutral world. We've been seeing that in Matthew. It's not a neutral world. It's a hostile place, spiritually hostile environment. So how then shall we live? How does God want our soul to be shaped? One of the early church fathers, a Roman lawyer, Latin-speaking lawyer called Minucius Felix, wrote a book in which he says, "We don't preach great things, we live them. We don't preach great things, we live them." And in these Beatitudes, we have this Greek word makarios, which here is translated blessed. I think one of the Bible translations has it as happy. How happy are the poor in spirit? I really don't think that's a great translation. For me, happiness would be a fast car on an open road, or January sales in a credit card, or coffee and chocolate cake. Happiness, vintage wine and camembert cheese for some, or a ticket to international and a pint of beer. For some, what happiness can mean any number of things. What it kind of really means in the biblical context is a blessedness that is untouchable and unassailable, because it comes from God and lasts for eternity. It's a blessedness that is untouchable and unassailable because it comes from God and lasts for eternity. The words are cheap. And saying you're a Christian doesn't mean that you are, any more than telling yourself that you're thin actually makes you thin. You might have tried it. I have on occasion. So I'm thin, I'm going to be thin. Didn't lose any weight at all. You can't think yourself thin. You can't think yourself a Christian. You've got to take that choice and change your life. G.K. Chesterton said that Christianity hasn't been tried and found wanting. It's been found difficult and not tried. So how does God make our soul? How does God create our soul? Well, Jesus here gives us some of the indications of a soul's quality that God is looking for in our character and in our life. And the first is this, what I call the gateway beatitude, the poor in spirit. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Eugene Peterson's translation called The Message has this: you're blessed, you're blessed when you're at the end of your rope. With less of you, there is more of God and his rule. It's about, I call it the gateway beatitude, because this is where it all begins, in a spirit of humility before God. It's a case of finding God and knowing him. It gives me a chance really to show the best cartoon that's ever been drawn. This is Larson's cartoon. I've used this so many times. I think it's just wonderful. It's Thomas the Tank Engine on Skid Row begging for a dime. And in front of poor Thomas, as he languishes in poverty on the sidewalk, he's got a sign that says, "I thought I could. I thought I could, but he couldn't." This is the poor in spirit. Some of you are looking absolutely blank at that, and some of you don't actually. I'm sorry about that. It's not required reading at the university and creative writing in English, is it not? Thomas the Tank Engine, you can do everything. He says, "I know, I think I can, I think I can," and he does it. You see, well, actually, this is Thomas in real life. "I thought I could, I thought I could." If you have to explain jokes, it doesn't work, does it? Well, no, why I did that. Anyway, the point is that the poor in spirit stand before God and say, I thought I could, but I really couldn't. And Lord, I'm a beggar for grace. I need you, God. Love the story of a group of ministers who are in the church talking, and they're discussing about the best way to pray. And one says, "Oh, the best way is I've got to kneel. If I don't kneel, I'm not praying at all." And the person says, No. I find that sitting down is great. I relax and I'm in God's presence. It's wonderful. And says, No. I find standing up and walking around just brings the presence of God with me. And there's an electrician at the back, and he's fixing one of the lights. And he joins in. He says, "Actually, guys, I tell you, I found the best way to pray is hanging upside down with a live wire around my ankles." The poor in spirit. Blessed are the poor in spirit, says Jesus. This is the gateway. You've got to be poor in spirit or you're going to get nowhere. Discovering that you're lost, verse 4. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Or the message, you're blessed when you feel you've lost what is most dear to you. Only then can you be embraced by the one most dear to you. John Stott wrote this. He said, "The truth is there is such a thing as Christian tears, and too few of us ever weep them. Blessed are those who mourn. What my life might have been like if I'd obeyed God from the start. If you can't shed tears for that, then there's no hope for you. If you can't shed tears for what might have been, if you just started earlier, if you just got on the Christian road earlier, some of us wasted years, and when we could have been learning and growing. Blessed are those who mourn. Realize what they lost before they got started." Donald Carson, the theologian, said, "Sin is there and it is inescapably ugly in the light of God's purity. That there's a sense in which we need to learn to mourn, discover what we've really lost, and then we can accept what God has given us. And then there's adopting a gentle Christ-likeness. Verse 5, blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Eugene Peterson has a go at this. He says, you're blessed when you're content with just who you are, no more, no less. That's the moment you find yourselves proud owners of everything that can't be bought. It's based on Psalm 37, which was one of Jesus' favourite psalms. John Bunyan said, he that is down needs fear no fall. He that is down needs fear no fall. A gentle meekness, a gentle Christ-likeness. John Ortberg, in his book God's Outrageous Claims, talks about a woman called Maggie who had a bitterly hard life, and she'd suffered terrible abuse and terrible problems, and she wrote a poem just encouraging people to be Jesus to her. And did I say John Ortberg? Lee Strobel, sorry, they're both guys from Willow Creek. I get confused sometimes. So Lee Strobel really enjoyed her poem. So he said he'd quite like to read it to the evening congregation. So he said, would it be all right if I read it at the services this weekend? Oh, Lee, she said, haven't you heard? He said, my heart sank. What had happened now? Had she encountered someone who'd been like salt that stung or light that glared? Had someone's hypocrisy chased this young woman away from God once again? No, Maggie, I replied with trepidation in my voice. I haven't heard. Tell me what happened. No, you don't understand, she said. It's good news. A few nights ago, I gave my life to Jesus. I almost jumped out of my chair, he writes. Maggie, that's terrific. That's the best news I've had in a long time. Tell me, what piece of evidence convinced you that the Bible is true? What fact did you uncover that finally established for you that the resurrection was real? After all, those were the kind of intellectual issues that had played a big role in leading me to faith. And I suspect he was kind of hoping she said it was one of your sermons, Lee. But she doesn't say any of that. She says, no, it wasn't like that for me, she said. You see, I just met a whole bunch of people who were like Jesus to me. She paused as if to shrug. That's all it took, she said. Just a bunch of people who were Jesus to me. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. And blessed are those who are longing for justice, verse 6. Longing for justice and goodness. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be lifted. Eugene Peterson says, you're blessed when you've worked up a good appetite for God. He's food and drink in the best meal you'll ever eat. I was just telling the story this afternoon of famous Bishop Nonis. I've repeated it so often in this church, they're tired of it. But you might be new and you might not have heard it. As I was talking about it this afternoon, I just sort of came to my mind. As Bishop Nonis was a bishop back in the 5th century, Bishop of Edessa. And he was in a meeting of bishops. And down the street came the most beautiful actress, the most beautiful woman in the world, covered in pearls and gold and with perfume and all her lovers round about her. The woman was notoriously immoral, but she was fantastically good looking. And all the other bishops kind of looked away so as not to be contaminated. Nonus, he looked his eyeballs out, just stared at her, and they all got embarrassed. And when she'd gone, he turned to me and said, did you see her? No, I didn't see her. You know. Wasn't she beautiful? Didn't her beauty cause you joy? We weren't going to answer that question. He said, well, her beauty delighted me. How long did that woman spend today preparing herself for all her lovers? And how long do we spend preparing ourselves for our God in heaven? And he went back to his lodgings, threw himself flat on the floor in tears, and wept and cried out to God, begging for mercy, as he said, because a prostitute spends more time making herself good-looking for her lovers than I spend making my soul just and righteous and good to offer to my Jesus. Those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. John Wesley said, "If I had 300 men who feared nothing but God, hated nothing but sin, and determined to know nothing among men but Christ and Him crucified, I would set the world on fire." I want to say, John, you could do it with 300 women as well, but women didn't really figure much in poor John's theology or philosophy of church leadership in those days. He had a few things to learn, bless him. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. And then, taking pleasure from being merciful. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. You're blessed when you care. At the moment of being careful, you find yourselves cared for. Tony Campolo had a friend who wrote to Mother Teresa in India, offered his help. He's a well-off, he or she was a well-off person, offered their help, and received a reply back from Mother Teresa. "I received your letter wanting to come to India. Thank you for wanting to come, but go and find your own Calcutta." Fantastic answer. Be merciful where God has placed you. Be merciful where God has placed you. And this is another John Wesley story. Governor Oglethorpe favourite wine was drunk by one of his servants. And Governor Oglethorpe said, "I will be avenged, and I never forgive." And John Wesley said, "In that case, I hope you never sin." Blessed are the merciful. Having a heart as pure as crystal. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. You're blessed when you get your inside world, your mind and heart put right. Then you can see God in the outside world. Having a heart as pure as crystal. Everyone has a price, they say. I was reading recently of a Christian preacher in the developing world. Had a group of ministers there. These guys were poor, and they were all working their heart. He said, "How many of you are 100% committed to what you're doing?" And they all put their hands up. And he said, "How many of you would leave your work and come to work for me if I doubled your salary and gave you a free car?" And they all laughed, because they all realized that we're not necessarily all as committed as we think we are. We don't all have hearts as pure and committed as a crystal. Before God can deliver us, we must undeceive ourselves, said Augustine. Before God can deliver us, we must undeceive ourselves. Tasker called it pure single-minded, who are free from the tyranny of an undivided self. Free from the tyranny of an undivided self. As Abraham Lincoln said, if I were two-faced, would I be wearing this one? Pure and undivided. C.S. Lewis said, "It's safe to tell the pure in heart that they shall see God, because only the pure in heart wants to." And then there's showing persistent faith in a war zone. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the sons of God. And blessed are you when people insult you and say evil things against you. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. There's a Peanuts cartoon where Lucy says, "I hate everything." She's having a bad hair day. "I hate everything. I hate everybody. I hate the whole wide world." And Charlie Brown says, "But I thought you had inner peace." And he says, "I do, but I also have outer obnoxiousness." Blessed are the peacemakers. In 1219, St. Francis, who opposed the Crusades, decided to go to preach to the Sultan. And he went, and he was captured, and he was beaten up quite badly. In the end, he got to see the Sultan, who demanded that he become a Muslim. Francis politely declined, but explained to the Sultan why the Sultan should become a Christian. And they met together every day for a month, talking about each other's faith. At the end of a month, Neither had changed their religion. But the Sultan let Francis go as a friend, and they parted company as friends. Blessed are the peacemakers in a war zone. Shining as a light in a dark world. Shining as a light in a dark world. A.J. Cronin, in his autobiography, An Adventure in Two Worlds, it's autobiographical work anyway. He has this, he quotes, "I have told you of Olwyn Davis, the middle-aged nurse who for more than 20 years with fortitude and patience, calmness and cheerfulness, served the people of a certain Welsh village. This unconscious selflessness, which above all seemed the keynote of a character, was so poorly rewarded, it worried me. Although she was much beloved by the people, her salary was inadequate. And late one night, after a particularly strenuous case, I ventured to protest to her as we drank a cup of tea together. 'Nurse,' I said, 'why don't you make them pay you more? It's ridiculous that you should work for so little.' She raised her eyebrows a little, but she smiled. 'I have enough to get along.' 'No, really,' I protested. 'You ought to have an extra pound a week at least. God knows you're worth it.' There was a pause. Her smile remained, but her gaze held a gravity and intensity which startled me. 'Doctor,' she said, 'if God knows I'm worth it, that's all that matters to me.'" Shining as a light in a dark world. Sir Frederick Catherwood was a Christian industrialist and philanthropist last century. So to try to improve society is not worldliness, but love. To wash your hands of society is not love, but worldliness. There's a thought. Conclusion then. God is in the building of souls. And in building your and my soul, God is doing what he does best, creating in you and me a character which reflects him, which reflects Jesus, which changes the world, which takes on the world with all its frustrations and its injustices and its inequalities and its pain and its sufferings and its disasters and its tragedies, and faces up to that in the midst of society and demonstrates a character that transforms the people round about them and any situation.